Nandana Pratyajana Ramkana Yamuna Chila Vanachare Yamuna Chila Vanachare Madhava Sundabi Haze Sarata Madhava Sundabi Haze Kapitana Balava Giribharat Hare Kapitana Balava Giribharat Hare Yashadanandana Pratyajana Randana Yashadanandana Pratyajana Randana Yamunachila Vanachare Yamunachila Vanachare Karata Madhava Kunjabi Hare Karata Madhava Punjabi Hare Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya 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 Jai Prabhupada. Prabhupada Jai, Prabhupada Jai, Prabhupada Jai, Prabhupada. All glories to the Sama of the Rajas, all glories to the Sama of the Rajas, all glories to the Sama of the Rajas, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guru Randa.
So what is it? 67.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Today we're going to read from Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We'll read from chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, which is titled Contents of the Gita Summarized. And we're going to read text 67. So Lord Krishna says, Indriyanam Icharatam Yammano nu vidhiyate Tadasya harati pragyam Vaya navam ivambasi. Translation: as a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Unless all of the senses are engaged in the service of the Lord, even one of them engaged in sense gratification can deviate the devotee from the path of transcendental advancement. As mentioned in the life of Maharaj Ambarish, all of the senses must be engaged in Krishna consciousness, for that is the correct technique for controlling the mind. And I think I'll read the next verse also, because it's giving further clarification on this very important point. So this is now chapter 2, text 68. Tasmad yasya mahabaho nigrihitani sarvasha indriyan indriyarte yas tasya pragya pratishtita. Therefore, O mighty Am, one whose senses are restrained from their object is certainly of steady intelligence. And again, a short purport I should hold that. One can curb the forces of sense gratification only by means of Krishna consciousness, or engaging all the senses in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. as enemies are curbed by superior force, the senses can similarly be curbed, not by any human endeavor, but only by keeping them engaged in the service of the Lord. One who has understood this, that only by Krishna consciousness is one really established in intelligence, and that one should practice this art under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, such a person is called sadhaka, or a suitable candidate for liberation. I'll read these two verses again. Indriyanam hi charitam yanmano nu vidhiyate tadasya harati pragyam vayor navam ivam nasi. As a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the roaming senses on which the mind focuses can carry away a man's intelligence. Tasmat yasya mahabaho nigrihitani sarvisha indriya indriyarte yas tasya pragya pratishtita. Therefore, O mighty Am, one whose senses are restrained from their objects is certainly of steady intelligence. I'm going to just turn the volume down just slightly, it's feeding back a bit. Sushimatai Gaurahari Kedai. Thank you. So, these are very important verses in Bhagavad Gita, talking about our predicament entangled here within this material world. Krishna is speaking here in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in other words, right at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, giving certain very important definitions. He's already in the first half or so of the second chapter, he's already explained who we are, that we are not these material bodies, that we're actually eternal, spiritual persons. Of course, we know very well that in material life, ordinary day-to-day life, people are assuming that they are these bodies. That is the general assumption, that I am a man, you are a woman, someone is Indian, someone is African, someone is European, or another living entity is a dog or a cat, so on and so forth. Everyone is identifying like this. And if you go to anyone and tell them, no, no, you're not this body, you're not a South African, you're not an Indian, you're not an African, two sides may be fighting in a war, whoever that might be. So they're fighting, I don't know who, the Chechens versus the Russians perhaps, or something like that. So, you can go to them and say, my dear sir, soldier, Mr. Soldier, you are not a Russian. So you have nothing to fight about. Rather, you're a son of God, child of God, and the so-called Chechenian is not a Chechenian either. He's your brother, also a child of God. So just go and embrace each other and forget about all this nonsense fighting. But unfortunately, it won't work very well, generally. Won't work very well. Because people, they are deeply entrenched in these conceptions or misconceptions of who they are. And course, in the human form of life, we have the opportunity, we have the intelligence, at least the opportunity, although we may not use it so much, to understand these things in a little more depth and think them through a bit. And even amongst ordinary people, sometimes you find the statement, my body, our bodies, for health purposes. I have just recently been advised to take up the practice of a little hatha yoga, just for health purposes, certain types of exercises, because there are certain conditions that my body is prone to, detrimental conditions, so just specific exercises. So earlier today I was going through one CD actually, in which they have pictures and videos and so on, and show you how to do all these different exercises. So there I came across the statement, you have to be careful with your body. But if you are you, if you are your body, how can it be your body simultaneously? It is either you or yours, but it cannot be both. Yes. Otherwise, there is like some sort of misconception and confusion over what am I? Am I me or am I something that belongs to me? How can you be you and something that belongs to you? Belongs to you means it's an external thing, but somehow or other it's your property. So how can you be something which is your property? So this is obviously not really possible. But sometimes even ordinary people who otherwise are not really understanding clearly this point, and what are the implications of this point, but even sometimes they think, or they express themselves like that, that this is my body, this is your body. But the animals, lower species, they don't have that intelligence. So Srila Prabhupada said that if you ever go to a dog and say, my dear dog, you are not a dog. You are not your body, but the dog will simply bark at you. Something like that. So, these bodies then, we are within these bodies, just like you may be within a house. We are within these bodies, just like a house has windows. So our bodies have certain openings to the world. Just like an enemy, a thief, perhaps, can climb in any window in your house and cause great loss and damage. So here, in a similar way, Krishna is saying that you are not this body. You are living within this body. This body has certain openings to the external world. In other words, the senses. The eyes, the ears, the mouth, the nose, and so on. These are openings, doors or gates to these bodies. And through these openings, then different things come. Sensory stimulations come through your ear. The stimulation of some nice music may come. Yes. And you are fascinated by that music. You give your attention. Soon you may be immersed in it altogether. Your eyes see some external thing. That external thing, you could say, effectively enters you through your eyes. It enters your mind. And now that external thing, maybe it's a nice motor car. If you are a motor car type of person, nice, new, expensive motor car, you see it. It enters through your eyes into your mind. And then it takes residence there. And then later on, you may be a long way away, But that car is still there within you. Isn't it? These things are going on like that. Some car, some member of the opposite sex, or some financial matter. So these things enter in different ways. They enter in different ways into your body and take up residence there and capture you, your attention. You may be in some place. You're meant to be doing some other thing, but your attention has been captured by some other thing, so now you cannot give your attention properly. You cannot focus. You cannot focus because your attention, your intelligence, your capacity to discriminate like this, your higher self, in other words, has been taken advantage of. Yes. So now you cannot give your proper attention and do things very nicely. So like this, Krishna is saying, as a boat on the water can be swept away by a strong wind. This can happen very easily. Particularly if you're in a small boat. If you're in a very big boat, even still it can happen, but if you're in a small boat, some of my devotee friends were telling me how they were in Russia. In Russia there is one big lake. It is perhaps 700 kilometers long. Lake Baikal. Very beautiful place. Practically untouched. So, it's a magnificent place. They decided, having a sort of a day off or something, nice day, let us go for a little boat ride. So there they were in the middle of the lake. Suddenly, there was a change. And the wind came up, clouds came, rain came, a storm came. The boatman was trying to get the boat in, small boat. But it didn't seem that they would make it. So one of our devotees, he thought, well, let us say it last rites or something. He was actually thinking that this is it. This is the end. Angamai Kida or something like that. Anyway, they survived. But they learned a lesson. That you've got to watch out. You've got to watch out. Oh, you may be in one situation, you may think, oh, it's all right. But this is the material world. Suddenly, the situation can change. And you'll be caught off balance, and you may get into big trouble. So Krishna's saying, just like a boat out there in the water, if a strong wind comes up, which can happen any time, then, in a similar way, even one of the senses, we have a number of senses, but even one of them, if somehow or other, it becomes captured, solidly captured by some degrading influence, then even though the rest of you is still there, the other senses and the rest of you is still there, only one sense has been captured. But Krishna is saying here that just that one sense, if it gets hooked strongly enough, then that can be sufficient to just destroy everything, destroy you and your whole program in life. I'll give you a very obvious, clear example. Someone may be a successful business person, or just an ordinary average person, but they become attached to drinking alcohol. There's so many people like that. Surely we've all seen that. So it's just one sense, really. It's just one sense. It's just one activity. It's not like a whole big thing. It's just one bottle, really. But that one thing, that one sense, can destroy the person completely, isn't it? Worse than death. Oh yes, so many times this happens. Or, even more insidious, really, or no less, at least, some people become attached to gambling. Yes. All sorts of things people become addicted to, actually. I may have told you before that back when I was living in England, I joined our movement in England in the early 70s, and we would go out distributing books in the streets there, just approaching people in the downtown areas. And sometimes the police would arrest us. Here, of course, we all know in South Africa you can sell anything, anywhere, anytime, doesn't matter. But there, oh, they're very touchy about their, you know, very pucker England, London. So we would get arrested and locked up. Yes. Seems a little funny, but actually it used to happen. They stopped doing it now. So there we were in the cells, and you get all sorts of people there. So there were advertisements. Alcoholics Anonymous, phone such and such a number. Because that sort of person, you know, unfortunately, they end up in that sort of place, really, like disproportionately, frequently. Gamblers Anonymous, that was also there. Yes, they're serious. People get hooked. Oh, and then the one which really struck me, and I had to look again just to make sure that I saw it correctly. There was another one that said, Tea Drinkers Anonymous. And they were not joking either. So anyway, gambling. We mentioned gambling. So this is also an activity of the senses. So some people get hooked. They get destroyed. I know a few. Well, I know two of our devotee ladies are married to two of them, and it's, oh, so difficult, very difficult. They both lost their houses, yeah, at the Wild Coast. It's a fact. So it just shows, just one sense. There's so many other things in the person's life, but just that one thing, and all the other things are lost. So it's like that. In this material world, we shouldn't underestimate. We should always be very respectful to the material energy, to the illusion. You might think, why be respectful to the illusion? Why not just try and give it a good kick? But we are very small, and the illusion is very big. So better to approach very respectfully and take shelter of Krishna. In fact, one of our great acharyas, Yamunacharya, he offers one prayer in one book, Chaitanya Chandramrita. He says that, impenetrable, undefeatable, illusory energy of the Lord. Who can understand, actually, all of your ways of working? Having considered how you work just a little bit, as far as I've been able, I have come to the point, he says, that I just offer my humble obeisances at your lotus feet. That's all. And the thing is, we cannot defeat that illusory energy. But Krishna can, because it's his inferior energy. So if we take shelter of Krishna, then, because he is much greater than the illusion, so by his mercy, he can tell the illusion, all right, step back. leave him alone. And you'll lose your energy. You'll step back and you'll get first-class ticket, one-way ticket, back to Godhead. That's nice. Very nice. But only by the mercy of Krishna, not by our own so-called mercy or potency, I will stand up against the material energy. Just like I've also mentioned this before, there was one cartoon I saw that really captured my attention, that the Russians, it was back in those days, had just dropped the atomic bomb on America for his fisted plane and said, "We will fight you to the end." But they had already reached the end. So, yes, anyway, material energy is very powerful. We're very small. And we're very susceptible. We're very susceptible. To the point that even though we have five senses, or six if we include the mind, but if just one of them gets solidly caught, inextricably caught in the illusion, and just attracted and pulling us constantly towards the illusion, then there's every likelihood that despite the other senses and whatever other faculties and capacities we have, we may just be dragged away. And that's it. Lost again in the material ocean. So therefore Krishna says here, one whose senses are restrained from their objects is an intelligent person. That is a nice definition of how to recognize who's intelligent, who isn't intelligent, who's foolish, like that. Yes. If someone has restrained their senses, they're not simply chasing around, being dragged around by their senses, looking at that, hearing this, and smelling that, and tasting something else, and touching another thing, in this way being dragged by the senses. If a person is restraining their senses and directing their senses to act in constructive ways for their actual benefit, in other words, directing their senses to be engaged in the service of Krishna, he is called Rishikesh, the master of the senses. So a person who's engaged like that, Krishna is saying here in the second of these two verses, that person is understood to be intelligent, not someone who's just being dragged here and there, looking, touching, smelling, tasting, having a festival of sense gratification, even though on a certain level they may appear to be very intelligent, have some credentials, university degree, like this, but they're not really intelligent, because even though they're not these bodies, they're being controlled by these bodies and dragged into that illusory world of bodily consciousness, and at the end of this life they'll get another body. And there's no guarantee in the next life that you'll get another PhD. They won't just walk up to you in your next birth, say, "Here you go, left over from your last life." No, if you want another one, you'll have to work for it. I mean, if Susi Nitai Gora Hare Kirita. Yes, if you want another one, you'll have to work hard for it. And you may not even have the capacity to do that anyway. So, that's a shame. Lost in the material world again. So, such a person who was identifying with the body and being dictated to by his senses, and in this way just being dragged here and there and trying to achieve things, even impossible things, and in this way wasting his time, and in the end got totally smashed. Such a person was Ravan. Next week, Monday. The second is Ram Navami, the appearance day of Lord Ram and his famous or infamous adversary was Ravan. Ravan was typical of the type of person we've just been talking about for the last so many minutes. He got caught by his senses, but particularly he got caught by one type of sensory attraction. What was that? He got caught by the propensity to become attracted to the opposite sex. Yes, that means the propensity for sex life. So he became bewildered by that. So bewildered that so many people, practically everyone, came to him and said, look, just give Ram his Sita back. After all, she is his wife. And you have just kidnapped her. So just give her back to him. Then he says he'll leave you alone. You can just carry on with your life. It was not that Ravana was a poor man. It was not that he was lacking in girlfriends either. In fact, he had a whole palace full of them. Dozens or hundreds, I forget exactly how many. So she was just another one out of so many, and they were all very exceptional young women. But he was just so overcome by this, that even though practically everyone was telling him, no, just do it, just give her back, that he couldn't do it. His brothers, some of his brothers at least, and his advisors, like his ministers, he was a king, so his ministers in the court who he kept just to give advice, virtually all of them said, just give Sita back, and all this trouble will be over, all the danger will be gone, and we can live happily. We have as much as we need, so let us just go on like that. But he couldn't do it. He couldn't do it. So in the end he got killed. In the end, in fact, on the night of the second to last day of his life, when all of his army had been destroyed, every single last one, there was only him left, and that was all. Then Lord Ram came to him and said, Ravan, just give me Sita back. I'll bring everyone back to life. Because he can do that. I'll bring everyone back to life. All your brothers, family members, friends, and soldiers, and everybody. I'll bring them back to life. And we can be friends. And I'll make them forget everything. That we were ever enemies and we got into this trouble. I'll make them forget everything. I'll make them think that we've always been friends. And we will be friends. And we'll live very happily. Just give Sita back. So Ravan couldn't do it. He just said, no. He wouldn't do it. Next day, he died. So Ravan was like that. There's one nice story. How Ravan, just before or maybe during or sometime like in the very early stages there of the battle, he was trying to gather support. So he went to one of his brothers who had left home and gone away. The other brothers were staying with him. But this other brother who had gone away, that was Mahiravan. Mahiravan. He lived in the nether worlds, lower worlds, beneath this planet. So Ravan went to him and asked him, "Will you help me? At least give a donation so I can employ some more soldiers." So Mahiravan said, "I'll do that." Everyone else he approached, they said, "Forget it. We're trying to fight Ram. Why would I give you anything? It's guaranteed to be wasted." But Mahiravan said, "No problem. I'll give you a good donation. Come with me." So he took him to one particular area, and there was a golden mountain, 72 miles high and 32 miles across at the bottom. Solid gold, encrusted with diamonds that were bigger than Ravan. And he was big. He was not like us, maybe at most a couple of meters tall. He was really big. So he thought, oh, as you know what entered his mind, he thought, "This is so valuable. Maybe I should just forget Sita and everything and just run away with this." But then he came to his so-called senses and said, no, can't lose Sita. So they were walking around looking at this, and Ravan asked Mahiravan, "Are you serious? Are you actually going to give this to me?" And Mahiravan said, "Yes, why not? It just dropped here one day. It wasn't here one day, it just fell here, and so why should I worry? I'm all right without this." So Ravan said, "Oh, thank you." He said, "You are a real brother. All the others, they are not real brothers, but you are a real brother." Then Mahiravan said, "Well, maybe I should just tell you one thing. That in your previous life, your name was Hiranyakashipu, and you were killed by Lord, the same Ram. At that time, he was in the form of Lord Narasingha, half man, half lion. And when he killed you, as he was killing you, one of your earrings fell off and fell down here and landed here. And this is it. In that life, you were so big that this was just one of your earrings. Now you're so small, relatively. And this is the same person. This Ram, he's the same person. So look, my charity really is my advice. Don't do it. Just give him Sita back." So then Ravan got very angry with him also. "I thought you were a real brother." Then later on that last day, Ravan came out on his own. One Ravan versus the rest. And the description is there in Ramayana. There were lots of monkeys. The figure is one, followed by 64 zeros. It's a very big figure. In Vedic language, it is called One Koti Maha Oga. Sounds formidable. One Koti Maha Oga. So there they were, all the monkeys versus one Ravan. And one devotee did a calculation. If Ravan was able to kill one monkey every second, it would have taken a whole day of Brahma to have killed all of them. But when he came out, he saw this vast number of opponents. And he thought, "No problem. I'll just kill them. It's all right." So he became bewildered. He became bewildered. And in the end, he lost everything. After he was actually killed, his wife, or main wife, came out And she was very distressed. Her husband was dead. But she was also an intelligent person. She knew what he was like and that he was wrong. So she told him. She told him that through your activities, you've made your body fit to be eaten by vultures, and your soul bone to go to hell. Those were the parting words of his dear wife. So he got reduced to that state. He got reduced to that state from being practically the controller of the universe. He got reduced to that state that he just became food for vultures, and his soul became fit to go to hell. Just because of one of the senses. Just because of one sensual propensity. The propensity to become attached to the opposite sex. So, of course, in Krishna consciousness, we have Krishna conscious household life where man and a woman can be married at the lotus feet in the service of God, of Krishna, and can then conduct their household life in terms of Krishna consciousness. So that's different. But if one is actually just addicted to sense gratification, then one is on a very dangerous path. In fact, basically, one is essentially on a path which is just leading down. That's all. So here in Bhagavad Gita, and in all the scriptures of the world for that matter, you'll see repeatedly statements like this. Don't get dragged down by lust, anger, greed. Don't get dragged down by your senses just into sensual activity. But control yourself. Instead of serving your senses, your eyes tell you, oh, look, a movie, the latest Hindi movie. Great cultural presentation. Chori, chori, chupke, chupke. Oh, we know about that. It was all over Bombay. Chori, chori, chupke, chupke. It has displaced, what's it called? Kuch Kuch Hota Hai, yes. Yes. So your eyes see it. Well, they have another one. It's not a movie, but all over Bombay. You understand Hindi. Kon Banega Kropati. You understand that? Understand my Hindi? Kon Banega. Who will become Kropati? Some gambling type of thing, large-scale gambling thing. In six months, one person won. So that's a good question. Kon Banega. Not very many. The rest probably just lose their money and get ripped off, as they say. So, our senses are dragging us. We are serving our senses. Our eyes tell us, oh, go and see. Joy, joy, chukke, chukke. And, very nice. Our ears tell us, oh, listen to the latest popular song. And so on and so forth. All these different types of things. Our skin or our mind tells us, yeah, go to the fashion store and dress up. You too can become Foxy Lady. It's just amazing. Anyway, sorry about that. But it's true. It's really true. Yeah. So our senses We are serving our senses. Look at that, taste that, smell this, hear that, touch this, so on and so forth. We are serving our senses. But we are not these bodies. We are not these senses. We are another thing. We are the eternal servant of Krishna. So let us engage our senses, not be engaged by our senses. Let us engage our senses in the service of Krishna. And when you do that, as we said, Krishna protects from the illusion. We may not be able to protect ourselves from the potency of the material energy, the illusory energy, but Krishna, if we engage our senses in his service, then he will protect us and will be able to engage very happily in his service without just being dragged around here and there. Rather, we can use our senses to serve him constructively in nice ways and please him. And in this way, we can perfect our lives. We please Krishna. Krishna recognizes us, that here, this is my devotee. And Krishna thinks, I want this person. I want this person. This person is pleasing me. I want to be with this person always. So, like this, one is accepted by Krishna as his associate and permanent servant, eternal servant. This is the perfection of life. No more birth, death, old age, and disease. And none of these things, but eternal life full of bliss and full of knowledge in the direct personal association of God. What could be better? Actually nothing. In fact, it is far better than anything which we might think, according to material standards, is very nice. Hare Krishna. Thank you all for listening. Well, hang on, we better answer a few questions here, so just bear with us for a few more minutes and then we'll have some kirtan. Is this done? Oh, all right. So here's a question. We spoke about the influence of the inferior energy of the Lord. Recently one devotee inquired what to do if one in a state of bewilderment commits a mistake or offense like offending the spiritual master but then realizes their mistake. What is the process for rectification? If you commit some offense or something like that, is this thing working properly? Or is it going in and out? Huh? Working? Okay. So, if you commit a mistake, if you're specifically here where the question is, if we commit an offense, offend the spiritual master, just offend any other devotee for that matter, so that is serious. There's serious implications. Because all the devotees are very dear to Krishna. So if you offend someone who is dear to Krishna, Krishna himself becomes offended. Just like you have your little dependent child. And someone comes up and gives them a good slap. And you're the parent. Then you may grab hold of that person. And they may say, oh, I didn't do anything to you. Why are you upset with me? But no, because the child is very dear to you, then naturally you become offended. It's only natural. So similarly, the devotees are like Krishna's children. They're trying to please him and serve him, and they're very dear to him as a result. So if you offend the devotees, then Krishna takes offense, just like a parent. So what to do? what to do. It's very serious. Krishna may reject you. He may reject you. Yes. So what to do? Well, actually, in a sense, it's very simple. It's very simple. If one approaches the person that one has offended, then and begs forgiveness very humbly. And if the devotee forgives, but then when Krishna sees that my devotee has forgiven, then Krishna will think, all right, I'll forgive also. Yes. So therefore, if you offend the spiritual master, or any of the devotees for that matter, then, or anyone really in a sense, but particularly amongst the devotees, if you really commit an offense, then you must go and beg forgiveness and be ready to do whatever is required to get forgiveness. And don't think that this devotee I offended, he or she, he's not much of a devotee. He's just a small-time devotee. I'm kind of big-time or medium-time. So, if I offend him or her, doesn't matter. They deserve it. Good for their character. It doesn't work like that. Yeah. Even if someone is just very small devotee, real neophyte, many shortcomings, many weaknesses, and you commit some offense, but still they're dear to Krishna. Of course, there are degrees of dearness, obviously. But even if you do a little service, then Krishna recognizes. So any devotee, you should be prepared to do like that. I think the sound is cutting out, isn't it? Yeah, sounds like. Means the battery is going flat. And the microphone. We don't have another battery. Okay, got another? Question here. Radharani is the energy of Krishna, being the pleasure potency of Krishna. How is it that Srihari had to appear as Gauranga Mahaprabhu to understand the ecstasies and glories of Srimati Radharani? Does this mean that Krishna doesn't understand his own energy? If so, why? Well, in a sense, like it's like that, but this is just the pastime of the Lord. It's not really that Krishna actually cannot understand, that he's incapable and somehow others become incompetent. That's not possible. No, he understands, but there's a thing called yoga maya. Maya means illusion. There are two types of illusion. Earlier we were talking about the well-known type that most of us, if not all, with all due respect, are under to one degree or another, usually to quite a fair degree. Mahamaya. Maha means great. So Mahamaya means the great illusion. You just lose track of everything, even who you are, where you came from, where you belong, what you are. Something as totally fundamental as that, just no idea. So, that is Mahamaya. But then there's another illusion. Yogamaya. Yoga means that which links you with God. Or that which connects you. So it's an illusion, but somehow it's a type of illusion which brings you closer to the Lord. And the Lord closer to you. So therefore we find in Vrindavan that the devotees are thinking, Krishna is just an ordinary boy. He's just an ordinary cowherd boy. So his mother, Mother Yashoda, sometimes chastises him to try to discipline him so he'll grow up as a person of good character, not just let him run around and become some sort of crazy delinquent. So Mother Yashoda tells him, "Oh, don't do that, Krishna." She's not thinking, "He's God, I must worship him." No, because of this yoga maya, then she is trying to train him like that. But in this way, it brings her closer to him, and it brings him closer to her. And even he thinks that, yes, I'm her son, I better be good. Yes. Even he thinks like this. This is yoga maya. And under that yoga maya energy, many wonderful loving pastimes take place, in which the devotees think that Krishna is just my lovable friend, or child, or whatever, even husband, or even boyfriend. And Krishna himself thinks, I am the son, I am the friend. But in that intimate mood of loving exchange, the ecstasy becomes much higher than just that formal situation. He is God, I am worshipping him, he is accepting my worship. It's not much fun.